My name's David Koob, and welcome to this session. It's a progress report from the Dependency Working Party, which started late last year. The Dependency Working Party started after a group of us went to see Professor Pete Yong and his staff at Macquarie Uni talk about how we could work together, and Pete expressed an interest in working in the area of dependencies. And so here we are now with our first report on what we've done and what we're going to do. The working party consists of Pete, which is Pete here, Bartosz, Andy White, James Basman, Andrew Kirk and myself. We spent a lot of time thinking about what we should do, and we eventually decided that what we would try and do is try and assess and develop practical approaches to fitting a dependent structure to real general insurance risks, and in particular the reserve risks of between different classes of business. And the first idea is to get a theoretical framework established, and then to work it into a series of practical steps for working actuaries. And so that's the very optimistic aim, and be so excited when and if we get this working well. Pete is doing the talk today. He's establishing a theoretical framework for the whole work we're doing, and so that's what he's going to talk about today. One problem we've had is data, and because Australian data is pretty poor. But we're working with a group of people from CAS and who have got a working party going in a similar area, and through them we're going to have access to the NAIC data, which will provide us with data for lines of business for about 50 companies, good data for 50 companies. There are hundreds of companies, but once you're able to get rid of companies which have changed all over time and allow for various things, you get about 50 companies, so it'll be interesting to see what comes out of that. The next step will be to present our findings later in the year at some forum which we haven't established yet. And so with that, I'd like just to introduce Professor Pete Yong. Pete has been Professor of Actuarial Studies at Macquarie Uni since 2003. Prior to that, he was a professor at the University of British Columbia, Vancouver, and a reader at the London School of Economics. He has worked on many consulting projects both in Australia, the US and Canada, and has had visiting appointments in Europe, Amsterdam and Ulm, Oxford and the USA. He works mainly in actuarial areas closely related to statistics and risk analysis. He has authored over 40 articles in top international journals, as well as recently completed a book for Cambridge University Press. Welcome, Pete.
Thank you. You know, I'm in a little bit of an unenviable position. You know, I'm a technician in a way, and I think the problems, you know, a lot of these problems that I hear, I instantly want to translate into technical language, and because I think I am of the opinion that a lot of these problems, we cannot talk about them in a very general level. We ultimately have to translate them out down into equations and algorithms and things like that. Now, so I'll say a bit more about that as we go along. So perhaps I better, you know, this working party started talking about dependence, okay? And, of course, dependence is a huge topic. And I don't think there are general answers to how to model. You know, there's not one magic bullet on how to analyze dependence. In fact, you know, my ballpark estimate of statistics that, you know, 80% of statistics is talking about modeling dependence in some guise, you know, and there's many different models, and you know, and each tackle dependence in a somewhat different way, and so to imagine that there is one way of analyzing dependence that will work for every conceivable situation is a dream. You know, it's not going to happen, okay? So the minute you start talking about dependence, then you have to kind of narrow it down and start, well, what kind of dependence are we talking about, okay? What is the concrete situation that is being confronted? Now, so straight away, and I'm very thankful to the other people on the committee, you know, we started focusing on specific areas of looking at dependence. And in particular, the one we're looking at is loss triangles, and where we have a number of different lines of business. And a big problem is, well, how are these different lines of business related? How are they dependent? And what is the implication of that dependence for, you know, things like diversification benefits and risk margins, etc.? Okay, so that is a much more detailed and narrowly focused problem. And the question then immediately arises, well, how do we model this? Should we use correlation? You know, there's work, people are starting to use copulas and things like that. What is the value of these things and how would you implement them? And these are all, to me, and I'm sorry, I'm a kind of an extreme guy, these are all, to me, technical questions, right? They're not going to be decided by you know, generalists' arguments, although I do firmly believe that general arguments do have an input into that discussion, but the other part is the technical development and see how it plays out. So in this talk, we're looking at a specific kind of dependence and situations and how to model it and what are the implications. So I wanted to be very sure that, you know, wasn't just talking, you know, people don't talk about dependence in this situation just for the fun of it. In the end, they want to talk about diversification benefits, the implications of dependence, right? So dependence is rarely a thing in its own right, you know, that you want to study in its own right. You use it for some purpose. Now, you know, so just a few general remarks, and I believe I have about half an hour. Is that right, David? You know, how does dependence arise? Now, of course, many different ways, and depending on the way, you're going to model it differently. Okay, so for example, you know, legislation might cause certain behaviors and common responses in different variables. Risk characteristics is another way of measuring dependence. Inflation, you know, these are very general remarks. Economic conditions, they might be known, right? And other situations, it's not known, but the data will kind of reveal it, okay? And that's sort of another extreme. So, for example, everybody knows, you know, what explains intelligence, for example, is the classic example. You know, you can't directly measure it, but you can indirectly measure it and then kind of structure it, okay? You can subject people to batteries of tests and you find that, you know, intelligent people will generally do better on all of them. And then the question is, well, so how, well, why or how? Generally, you know, and the important thing in insurance is that imperfect dependents, right, if they are uncorrelated, to speak loosely, implies, amongst risks, implies diversification benefits of some kind. And so the question is measuring that and then translating it into diversification benefits. Okay? Now, of course, we have data, okay? And data imposes limitations on how you should and can, or what is possible in terms of modeling dependence. Okay? So, for example, in the loss triangle situation to which I will go in a minute, there is limited data. You know, we don't have hundreds of years or months or whatever. Okay? So a very sophisticated approach is not going to deliver, you know, and I'm making very general statements, results that are going to be radically different from very, you know, rough approaches, okay? Because the data cannot support the distinctions that these different models imply, okay? You know, and the question, of course, inevitably arises, how much data do you need? You know, I hear this question a lot, and of course it depends not only on the amount of data, but on the amount of variability within the data, right? It's that playoff. So there's no magic number like 20 or 100 or whatever. It depends, you know, if there's no variability in data, you can decide issues with one observation. Okay, but if there's a lot of variability, then you need a lot of many observations. Now, another thing about this, and we had quite some discussion about this in the working party. You know, to me, quantitative exercises like this are two-way conversations with the data. Okay, and that doesn't mean that you accept everything that data is saying. And, you know, there's a big role for subjective input and, you know, figuring out, well, maybe the correlations I'm measuring now are not going to pertain into the future, okay, and we need to change that. So I'm not in favor of a totally technical approach, you know, a computer programming, you press the button and out pop results. That's, you know, it's an iterative process. Now, unfortunately, I work in universities and I often do not see the, you know, the more subjective background to data. So I tend to focus on the technical solutions. And perhaps today you will criticize me and say this guy's too technical, but it's not because I necessarily want to be, because I don't have that subjective feel that is often required, and that varies from context to context, and I'm interested in general techniques. Okay, so modeling dependence, it depends on the context. You know, should we use correlations? Should we use copulas? Can sources of dependence be directly measured or only indirectly, like intelligence? These are all important questions that impinge on how we approach it. So I'm firmly, and I think we all are, that there's no single approach. There's no magic bullet. When people come up to me, oh, copulas, isn't that the way of the future? Well, it's just another tool in the, you know, toolkit. And, you know, it has its advantage and different, you know. So, for example, now I'm not going to go into a lot of technical detail, but there's a whole technical paper that you can download, and it has copulas in there and all these wonderful things, okay? And these things reduce down to very simple things if you make various simplifying assumptions, right? So the level of complexity is... you know, you can make it more complex, and I'm just focusing on the simpler form of everything. Okay, so we're talking about loss triangles and lines of business. So each line of business has a loss triangle behind it. We want to quantify the dependencies. But not only that, we're not here to say the dependence is X or 0.8 or whatever, or such and such a copula works well. We want to translate it into risk margins, okay? Because that's the, you know, that's where... okay, so I'm going to talk through this example to just, you know, fix ideas. I just got this data off the back of a truck. Actually, it came from the U.S. Somebody sent it to me. And I don't actually know a lot about the background to these loss triangles, but they are 10 years data from 86 to 95. You know, some have a huge amount of business behind them. They are viewed as being related in some sense, and we want to calculate risk margins, diversification benefits. And not only that, is what... how can we assign diversification benefits down to each of the different lines of business? Okay? Now, already people have started, commenting on this paper, and they say, well, how, you know, is this catastrophe, inflation trends, other things? Now, these are important issues, but I don't know the data well enough, and I'd have to go into the data, and one of the hopes we have is to get real data where we can actually start talking about these things in the context of, you know, the kind of models I'm outlining here today. Now, you all know, so here's one of the triangles. We want to figure out, you know, how this is all going to run off or develop. Now, notice we have some indicator of the volume of business, and then we have the cumulatives. Okay, and now I'm sure that everybody here knows the background. So we have 8 of these triangles, okay? Please interrupt me if you have any questions. Okay, so runoff. A friend gave it to
It's sort of dummy data at the moment. We really don't have good data by class of business for one company yet. So that's the next step, isn't it?
Yeah.
So this is just a theoretical construction at the moment.
And I wanted to show, apply it to data. I didn't want to just sit here. Right. Okay. Great. You know, that's, I'd love that. You know, I'd really appreciate that. You know, sometimes getting data is.
It's an ongoing problem for everyone.
Yeah. And, you know, so my motivation in using this data, it is obviously data, and I want to ensure that I'm not just talking theoretical stuff. This translates into actual things that people are interested in. Look, here's 3 triangles. I normalize them on volume of business, okay? Now, I know that's imperfect. In this case, it's the premium collected, okay? So, In this year, more business is done than in that year, etc. So it's normalized as divide in this particular case. Here's the first 3 triangles. I've just put them together. Don't focus too much on the numbers. But here we have, you know, for each development year, we have certain means and standard deviations. And these things I will use later on. Okay, and I've just got 3 triangles sitting here collapsed into this thing. At the back of this, there's 8. Okay, but I've run out of space. Now, here's the top little triangles from the first 3 normalized. And the question, of course, is how are these related? And, you know, when we set risk margins, what is the implication of any dependence we measure on risk margins? Now, okay, don't have a heart attack. I haven't seen too many equations in this. There's the payment, okay? So I'm converting cumulatives to payments. Okay, so just going back here, these are payments per unit of business. Okay? And so I'm looking at the changes, the payments. It's payment triangles. Now, how am I modeling it? Now, somewhere along the line, we have got to introduce dependence between the lines of business. And I'm doing it in a very specific way here. And I'm simplifying, and I could kind of, change this around a bit. But I think this is a useful way or starting point. And, all these copulas I discuss in the paper sort of collapse down to this. The payment for triangle or line of business L in accident or origin year I at development J, right? It's some mean, not depending on accident year, and some standard deviation, right? So these are the numbers that are sort of like in the bottom here. These are the estimates of those numbers, right? Now, how am I coming in with the correlation between the triangles, right? There's some residual here, okay? There's some fluctuation about that mean for each loss triangle development year. There's some residual. What explains that residual? That is the part that is correlated, okay, or dependent. Okay, how is it dependent? Well, first of all, because we've got a standard deviation out the front here, the standard deviation of this thing in here must be 1. Okay, to preserve standard deviation. So we now say, look, it's built up of two components, what I call a common component that that's related across triangles, and a specific component. Okay? Now this sort of trick is kind of standard in statistics, you know, where you break things up into communalities and specificities. Okay, so this is the part, variation, that is specific to the triangle, has nothing to do with the other triangles, and this is the portion that has everything to do with the other triangles. And I'm going to model that common component, right? Now, we can structure it in different ways. Look, here I've just got it, so that's the same equation, okay? And I'm saying these common components, right, they're collected, so there's one common component for each triangle. Okay. They're related through a correlation matrix. Okay, I'm making gross assumption here. They're relaxed in the paper and things like that. Okay, but just to keep things. So this really models the correlation or the dependence between the triangles. Okay? And our aim is to figure out what that correlation is. Okay? These dependencies are moderated, you know, they come in here. They're sort of, you know, they're weighted by these communalities, there's the specificities. Each one of these has standard deviation 1. Okay? Now, is that sort of okay? Now, so what do we have to estimate here? Means, standard deviations, the correlation matrix, and the communalities. Now, you might think, oh, that's a lot of parameters. It's not really, you know, once again, you can structure these things. And keep in mind, here in this particular case, we have 8 triangles, each with 10 years of data. Okay, so that is 10 by 10 is 100, but then half of it, I think it's 55. 8 times 55 is 440 pieces of information. You know, there's room to estimate, you know, 40 or 50 parameters. And even that, if you can't do that, you can kind of structure these means and variances and also the correlations. Now, okay, here, just to show you, and I'm not outlining the actual estimation formulas, once again, it's in the paper. These are the actual correlations that I'm estimating off this model, right? So these are actual correlations, what I think is happening between these triangles. Triangle 1... Just look at the blue part, okay? Triangle 1. Okay, because I've just collapsed some. Remember, this whole thing is not the correlation matrix. The top part of it is the top part of the correlation matrix, okay? So here, just collapse, if summarizing whole in one table, okay? So on the diagonal, I've got this. Squares of these communalities, okay? So, you know, just forget about, you know, this is just rescaled correlations on the bottom. So what we're seeing here, for example, triangle 1 is highly related, according to the data, with triangle 3. Okay, now that would be very hard to figure out by just looking at triangles. Triangle 1 is not related to triangle 2. You know, and all through here, we see the correlational structure. Now, I better keep fast pace. Now, one of the things that, you know, people do in statistics is instead of looking at these correlation matrices, they try and summarize them in some sense and decompose them into, you know, could all these correlations be actually explained by one or two common factors? Okay, or maybe 3. And I've actually done that here. And so it turns out that all this correlation in the blue stuff that you saw on the previous slide can all be pretty much summarized into 3 factors. Okay? So the first factor explains a lot of the action in triangle 1, 3, and 6. The second factor explains a lot of the action in line of business 5, 7, and 8. And triangle 2 is really out of it, right? It's really the third factor. So here now we're getting a detailed picture of dependence. And, you know, I won't go through all these numbers because I'm running out of time. But these give you some indication of what the data is saying about dependence. Okay, that would be very hard to kind of pick up just by looking at the triangles themselves. Now, I'm almost done here. How much more time have I got? Okay, so now, as I said at the start, we're not interested in dependence for its own sake. We're interested in dependence for diversification benefits. Okay, what does this translate to? If you look at these lines of business, right, and use this model to forecast the expected payments out into the unobserved portion of the triangle, adding them all up, right? So these are the estimates of the expected payments, right? If you then were to calculate a risk margin on those expected payments, right, picking up from the variability, now instantly people will say, well, what risk measure are you using? And, you know, we can use things like VAR or CTE or a whole host of others, and that's discussed extensively in the paper. But you can use any risk, well, any normally employed risk measure here to figure out what these standalone risk margins should be. Now, in this particular example, I've used one risk measure, and that is the expected maximum in 10 independent copies of this whole situation. Okay? And you can calculate it out. So here it would say you need a risk margin of 21.4. If you were just to look at that particular triangle, right? These are standalone risk margins, not recognizing the dependence between the triangles. 8.97 on that one, etc. Okay? So the risk, total risk margin, standalone risk margin, is 80.3. Okay? That would protect you or cover you in, for the expected maximum in 10 independent copies of this whole situation, okay? Sort of roughly like the 90th percentile or whatever, okay? I don't want to get into... Now, the diversified risk measure. How much are you going to be saving if you recognize the dependence? Some will be up, others will be down, etc. And I'm just looking at the dependence that I've measured in this triangle. Okay, this one goes down from 21.4 to 17.03. This one goes radically down. Okay, now that's related to its correlation with the others. Okay, this one at the bottom goes completely down. You don't have to have a risk margin for that line of business because whenever it's up, the others are down or something. You know, it's hard. I'm just talking through it a bit. And so here we have a saving of from 80 to 52, and I think these are in millions or hundreds of millions of dollars or something like that.
Right, it's a shapely value, the way
you have it. No, it's the expected maximum. Okay, and I could use any one. Okay, that, I
shapely value isn't a particular risk measure, it's a way of allocating.
Yeah. Benefits. Yeah, no, I haven't. I come to a formula in exactly how I allocate it, okay, in a minute. Okay, I'm going to skip that. It's all about the risk measures, and it's all about how these things are actually computed out, okay? And you look, don't look at all this stuff. Just, I could take any risk measure, VAR or anything like that, and construct a similar table to what is here, okay? Here's how, you know, I'm calculating. Look, this is the stand-alone margin. One dot means stand-alone. Two dots means stand-together, diversified margin. These are on a standard deviation, multiplied by the standard deviation, and we get the total diversification saving on the left. Okay? It's the difference between the total stand-alone margin and the total diversified margin. Now you can break, you know, a little bit of elementary algebra just breaks that up into the percentage diversification benefit you get on each triangle, right? Going from the diversified margin to the standalone margin. That's the percentage saving. You weight it by the proportion of the standalone margin attributable to triangle L. That's a weight. You know, this is just a trivial piece of algebra. And that's exactly how I get these savings. Oops. Up here. Okay. And I've just put that in graphical terms here. And I'm almost done. On line of business 8, you are saving tremendously. Okay. However, and that's this, you know, when that's 1, you're saving everything. Right, you don't need a risk margin. But unfortunately, its proportion of the standalone margin is very small. It's a minor line of business. So this is more or less, the green stuff is the product renormalized. On line of business 2, you're saving a lot. You know, it is a substantial part of your business. That is, you would have to allocate a substantial part of your standalone margins that are coming from line of business 2, and the product is the green stuff renormalized. So these green bars are actually the proportions of diversification benefits you should be allocating, of the total, how you should allocate them to each line of business. Now, this is my last slide. I've gone over technical things. I've not discussed actuarial judgment. You know, we could massage and hand polish these correlations and see what their effect is on the diversification benefit, etc. I've not done so because I don't really know enough about this data set. I've not discussed, you know, there's discussion of that in the paper, non-Gaussian copious transformation. I didn't discuss actually how I did the estimation. It's all in the paper. And residual analysis. I'll leave it at that. Thank you, David.
So if anyone has some comments or questions, just state your name and ask it there.
Okay, Colin Priest. One of the things I didn't notice was, so you've adjusted for the heteroscedasticity through the development periods.
Yep.
Yeah. But I would actually expect that the correlation would change through development periods. As you go into the tail, you're getting fewer and fewer observations out there, so it's more non-systemic risk versus systemic risk out in the tail.
Okay.
So the actual correlations should be strongest where you've got most of the payments happening and weakest where you've got the fewest payments happening.
That is a bell and whistle on this model, and I think these are all good suggestions, you know, but they are just tweaking various aspects of the model to accommodate features such as that.
Yeah. It would be a very common feature, so I would have called it a bell and whistle. It's a standard feature of insurance data. One of the ways you could do it with data you would normally have, probably not in that data, you normally have the number of finalised claims.
Right, okay.
And you could probably use that as a measure, as one of your ways of describing the strength of that relationship. The other comment I've got is, it seems like you're just looking at single residuals at a time and correlating with the other related residual from the other triangles. One of the risks is you get a set of residuals that all move the same way at a time. So there are dependencies between adjacent residuals,
what we're actually doing is correlating a whole triangle, diagonal of the loss triangle.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so not single elements within it.
Yep.
So it's the whole, you know, we're looking at across all the triangles and all the calendar year payments falling in the same year,
okay.
In the same calendar year.
Okay, so you have that structure and you could always use a different shape in other forms. So sometimes you might use a row because that's the catastrophe type and the... Yeah.
Correct, yeah.
Okay.
Thanks, Colin. Someone else? It's Peter Hardy. I suppose a lot of this is all theoretical and so forth. I suppose one thing that I'd like to see, I suppose, coming out of, I suppose, this sort of working group really would be some sort of working practice. I mean, something that's common in the industry that's used today is a bait up and read paper, simplistically, in terms of what's actually used there, without necessarily there being a lot of science behind the basis of it. So it sounds like you've got some sort of framework here, possibly to actually judge that by, or actually try to measure within the Australian environment. And I think that would be a really good outcome to get from this. And I suppose an outcome of this may be, is the approach that's actually currently being used in the Australian environment, which is typically that bait up and read, is it actually a valid approach to be using? And I suppose there's probably two aspects of that that I'd actually look at. One is actually for lower percentile risk margins, such as used for APRA, and the other one is more in the terms of where, you know, I suppose you're talking about the tail and the higher percentiles, and whether that approach is actually appropriate. I probably think it's probably not. Just one comment about, I suppose, just those extreme percentiles as well. Something that I would really find useful is some sort of scenario analysis to say, well, you know, how do these sort of try and relate it back to a real-world sort of situation? I know that's very difficult because you're talking about a 1 in 200-year event, but actually trying to see where those sort of correlations or those dependencies actually lie within that tail would be something that would be really, really interesting.
Thank you. Colin, have you got another question?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Sorry, one more. I just wanted to add to that. If you think of the bait and breed paper, what it gave was a standard set of correlations for Australia. And one of the things I was talking with Pete about yesterday is what I'd like to see as another approach is a standard correlation matrix for Australian business, and then via a Bayesian approach, where you combine that with the individual insurer's data, coming up with the insurer's dependencies. So where you're blending some much deeper data and more reliable and ending up with a more robust estimate.
Sort of like a credibility
you can think of credibility as a particular form of Bayesian.
Yeah, that's right.
And it should be related to the size of the insurer, the line of business. If it's tiny, the correlation should be almost zero because it's almost entirely non-systemic, depending on actuary bias. But
thank you for your comment. You know, I think they're really useful.
Anyone else like to make any comment or question? Thank you very much. Thanks, Pete, for that presentation. And here's your gift. And we look forward to working the rest of the year on this when we have some real live data and we.